Osiris.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
My name's Danny. This project is called Amigo the Devil. It started about 12 years ago, 13 years ago. Feels like a lifetime. And fortunately, I am in a recording studio that we just built. In my opinion, that's the biggest dream I could have ever had. The ability to have a controlled space for myself that I can wake up and just come write songs in.
I got time and I'm full of hate, loaded on ketamine and heartbreak. Nothing has been the same since you've been gone. And every night's a little bit longer, and every drink's a little bit stronger. My peace of mind ain't peaceful at all.
Walls are here. Stuff is up.
I see at least four skulls in the recording studio behind you. Are there more that I'm not seeing?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's about 9 in that cubby.
9 skulls.
Yeah. There's a lot of... I've been collecting a lot my whole life. Not just skulls. A lot of things. And the studio is kind of a little home for all of it. Like a mini museum of my hoarding.
Right. You're tuned in once again to the show on the road. I am your Sonic Spelunker, Z Lupitin, and as you hear, we are talking to the one and only Danny Kirinos of Amigo the Devil. It's sort of his alter ego, as it were. He maybe has created a genre for himself called murder folk. Let's just say that murder ballads have been around for 150 years or more, and he is creating something that merges both the death metal world and the folk and rock and roll worlds together, and I am here for it, and so are his fans. But as you'll hear from our conversation, Danny takes things a little deeper than most song collectors and murder aficionados. Danny has a collection of serial killer memorabilia. He has art by John Wayne Gacy, and you have to wonder, why are we so obsessed with the gruesome and the gory and the dark and the twisted? Since cinema was invented over 100 years ago, we paid good money to see people butchered and murdered in front of us. Why are we obsessed with true crime novels, with true crime podcasts, with people getting murdered and disappeared? What Danny has done with his Amigo the Devil project is to make friends with that darkness, that sickness, that cannibal within. Because even if you think you're a good person, you're never that far away from doing something that you can't take back. Some of the first recorded murder ballads were collected in Scandinavia, England, and in Scotland around the 1840s. Like a game of tastefully morbid telephone, it went from Knoxville Girl to Wexford Girl, from Ireland to Tennessee, and then Amigo the Devil talked about his own grandfather and how he could see the seeds of his despair growing inside him. And unlike most songwriters, Danny is okay with exposing his own sin, his own fear, his own darkness. Now, this music isn't for everyone, of course. My mom probably is going to be tuning off right about now, but you're here on the show on the road to discover music that maybe takes you a little bit out of your comfort zone. That is my job, to try to get you to listen to things that maybe you would never dream of listening to. And Danny has been on the road for a decade plus trying to tell these stories. And just now, people are really listening. Hundreds of people are packing these venues every night to see him and his band. And I hope you'll be one of them after hearing this new record. If you like what we do here, bringing new music into your ear holes, please send us a kind review on the Apple Podcasts page and share this show with your friends. We have some really cool stuff coming up, including my talk with, yes, John Oates of Hall and Oates. Okay, I'm going to stop talking. Thanks for being here. Here he is now, Danny Quirinos and Amigo the Devil.
Who put the mean in ketamine? I hate ketamine.
When you get up in the morning, do you try to make a point of having a creative practice where, you know, maybe it's journaling, maybe it's sort of getting out your guitar, or your banjo, and just putting something down almost to cleanse your mind or to like put something into the world? Or is it just you? Are you waiting for the lightning to strike?
Yeah, I'm a waiter. I'm definitely a procrastinator for the most part. And I am writing all the time. That's something that just, I don't know if it's like a neurosis or if it's just a pleasant escape from the world, but I don't have a schedule to write on. Like, I know, you know, some people wake up and write a song before they start their day. Right. I just can't do it because I realized anytime I force myself to write, it comes off that way. It feels very forced. It feels like I am trying to control some creative process.
Yeah.
It's worked in the past to some degree, but those are usually the songs that I end up kind of losing my passion for and losing my, it feels like what it was. It was created. You know what I mean? When you're just kind of following whatever guide comes down and says, just write this down, that feels a lot more natural. That feels a lot more put together.
Well, congrats on the new record, Yours Until the War is Over. I've been really, really digging it. It's funny listening to this record on full volume with my 2-year-old running around. Because she has no idea what you're saying, but she's like into the energy that's going on. I feel like 2-year-olds have a lot of moody moments. I think that's maybe why she's so obsessed with Elsa from Frozen, like every little girl in the entire world. It's like, Elsa from Frozen is actually like almost like the villain. Like she's like dangerous. She's like killing people with her like ice hands, you know?
The Frozen soundtrack is also amazing.
Like, it is amazing. But I had never seen it ever until like maybe a couple months ago. And I was like, I guess I'll have to like dive into this rabbit hole with the rest of the little kids now. And the fact that they're so in love with her as this main character, as this anti-hero, almost like villain who has to go out into the middle of the woods and separate herself from humanity so she doesn't kill everyone. That's the hero all these little girls are into. I was like, wow, that is fascinating from a psychological standpoint. Not saying that Yours Until the War is Over has anything to do with Frozen, but I feel like there's this really interesting thread about how the cannibal within all of us is, it's always lurking beneath the surface in that we kill ourselves from the sins of our genetics, sins of our addiction, of our needs and wants and passions. Obviously, there's a scourge of fentanyl addiction and people getting lost in communities across this country.
When I started writing these songs and I started kind of processing that there may be, I don't want to say a central theme, but there is a thread that weaves through the entire, not storyline, but it does connect. This is just another side of that story. This is another emotion attached to that doubt, to that dispassion, if you will, just complete disassociation from self-preservation. That disassociation as a freedom, while other ones like Cannibal Within were about, if you find too much freedom in that, you're toast. You're done. You're getting sucked in the little vortex of losing the wonder of life, essentially. That's kind of, in my opinion, where a lot of this record headed, was trying to realize how many things we allow ourselves to believe that take away the wonder of life.
In a major turn of events, it turns out I'm depressed. They say I use jokes and joy to avoid the realization that I can think of solutions for that. Just turn on the radio and cock it back. I just don't want to blow my brains out to Hotel California.
So at the end of it, even though there isn't a song that wraps it up like that, it was very much an exploration of what are the aspects in my personal life that are taking away the joy of it. I'm glad those songs came out the way they did.
Losing the fight, eating alive by the cannibal within, and that overwhelming feeling, oh, the pressure in my chest to swim against the sinking feeling that today might be my last. But everything looks bigger in the mirror of the sea. Come see how lonely of a hunter the heart tends to be.
Well, murder ballads, songs that cover the darkest points in our humanity, right? There is like a cleansing feeling we get from singing them, from listening to them. I remember when I was probably, 11 or 12, and that Johnny Cash, Rick Rubin collection came out, and he obviously did Hurt, but he also had that song he did many years earlier in the 60s, I think, called Delia, and that he hears like the sound of her feet walking past him like as a ghost when he's in jail because he murdered her.
But jailer, oh, jailer, jailer, I can't sleep, cause all around my bedside I hear the patter of Delia's feet. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone.
Obviously, you love horror films. You collect a lot of serial killer memorabilia. There is this sort of thrill that we get almost peeking through the curtain to the other side, like the upside down, as they maybe call it in TV talk these days. That opening track, Hanging by the Roots, I love that line. That the sycamore keeps growing as we water it with blood, holds all the secrets that we bury in the mud. All these societies and sort of families that came before us, they're all hiding their layers of secrets. Why did you want to open the record with that song specifically?
That was the last song that was written for the record, and it wasn't supposed to be on it. I sat down and I remember I was exhausted. We were so far down the rabbit hole of recording and almost done. And I sat down and just remember putting it out into the world. I was like, I just need one more song. I just need one more song for this record. And I started thinking about my grandfather. And I do want to say this, that song isn't about my grandfather, but thinking about my grandpa did kind of spark it. How much I'm kind of becoming the person that he was, not necessarily in positive ways. I keep finding a lot of the same control that he tried to have throughout his life. I think he treated people around him in that way of just needing to be the person in control. And ultimately it was his demise. Ultimately it is what caused the last 6-7 years of his life to be terrible. He wasn't a terrible person. He just didn't know how to trust other people. He didn't know how to let go of that need to just dig his claws into everything and have full control over it.
The sycamore keeps growing as we water it with blood and hold all the secrets that we bury in the mud. We can burn it to the ground or climb up the branches to decorate a house on fire. But no matter what we choose, in the end, we're hanging by the roots.
And that's one small aspect of what led me to the song, but I remember playing the little acoustic part of the dun, 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 dun. And I just imagined what it would be like to have the opposite, which is just complete lack of control, complete lack of any, I don't want to say dignity, but just any level of compassion towards life itself, not towards people. And it was just wild to think about how many subconscious elements of ourselves come from our lineage.
Mm-hmm.
Things that are built inside of us genetically, and that if I didn't make an active effort to change what was instilled in me from my surrounding, mm-hmm. you know, hanging by the roots, like your demise will be what you're grown from and what holds you grounded to a lineage, to a bloodline, to anything that you've grown up around. That includes friend groups, that includes expectations when you're young. And then as soon as that song was done, it immediately reorganized the entire track listing, because the record was going to start with this song called Agnes. And after that song was born, it just didn't make sense.
Right, because you mentioned basically that the sort of the theme or the title of the record in Agnes, which is sort of this almost interesting interlude song. You know, I'm yours until the war is done. I'm yours till the morning. The same likely story when you wake up.
I'm yours in the evening. I'm yours while you're dreaming. I'm yours in the neon sun. I'm yours when we ramble with the ring made of bramble. I'm yours till the war is done.
I feel like there's that study that keeps coming around every few years of like whether or not we have free will or whether or not we are the result of our great grandparents making it through famine in Ireland or something, you know, like that you can see all these scars from previous generations that the youngest generation has to then make a break from, you know, like you are not your grandfather, but there's also parts of you that you don't know, even know why you feel and act and talk and breathe and see things like your grandfather. You know, did you have a relationship with him that was important?
No, that's kind of the weird part is I never had a bad relationship with any of my family members, but I also didn't have an association to them, and no one did anything to me. Also didn't ever make any effort to understand any of my life choices at all. So it was a lot of just criticism, and same with everybody. It's not a woe is me thing. I feel like that's the lowest form of family problems you can have, you know? Like, I got very lucky in that aspect. And I separated myself pretty early on. My mom and my sister are the two people I grew up around. We would go visit family all the time. It just, as I got older, I lost interest in putting up with things that I didn't really want to be around to be judged by.
Well, sometimes your family is not your community. It's not like the people that you are drawn to that actually understand you, you know,
yeah.
And that can be painful for sure. I mean, I know basically you got kicked out of school, you know, when you're what, 12, 13, and then you had to kind of bounce around. It's like you seeing that first kid who's wearing the, you know, the white zombie shirt. It's like you got to connect with someone who's like, wait, is this my family?
Yeah.
Are these my people? Yeah. Which is pretty young. I mean, to see, you know, to feel that, but like sometimes like you don't know sort of where you belong until you see someone else who's just as weird and out there as you, you know, you can be weird together. That's like the best part of making music for me is like, hey, someone understands.
Yeah, absolutely.
These visions that I have that no one else can see.
I think what I'm starting to realize, like if I saw somebody in my position back then, I think what I've learned at this point is that while growing up, we look for this complete inclusivity into our brain, our understanding, our world. So we find friends and communities that we either want to be fully immersed in, or communities that we can identify with and fully immerse ourselves within. But nothing has to be an absolute.
I mean, I just recently started going to therapy again for the first time in a long time. And this therapist, like, is trying to, like, get to know me in the first section. You know, it's like, all right, let's cover the whole trajectory of your life, basically.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, so your mom, good, bad. It's like, wow, no one's ever like phrased it like that. I feel like it's pretty good, but like, I don't know how she feels all the time about it. You know, she's maybe like disappointed that I'm not like doing better in life or something.
It's just such a weird dynamic to look at somebody when you're young and you go, well, that's not what I want to be. So I'm not going to learn from this person because it's not what I want to be. And then as I slowly become those people, I realize if I had just set my own selfish needs aside, and if I hadn't felt so judged, and if I had been more secure in myself at the time,
right,
I think it would have been a lot easier to just tell myself, well, you know, they don't like this. They don't get it. Who cares? Doesn't matter. It's my thing. And then learn from them all the parts of life that I didn't get. I think that's the biggest hiccup that I had, was I lost interest in learning any aspects of life that I didn't care about.
Right.
And now I'm realizing how important those aspects are, because that's where the subconscious actually grows rather than just your conscious decisions. If I had asked my grandpa more questions about his life while he was alive, I might have more answers as to why I feel the way I do a lot of times. And then I could, instead of taking on those qualities that were built into my being, I could understand them a little better and know how to work around them. And it's all betterment. Like, knowledge is never bad. Like, learning how to hurt people is probably bad knowledge, but if you if you learn it and then know not to do it, you know, that's good. So it's all about how you apply what you learn.
I promise I'll fix what you need. Just give me some time and you'll see. I know it's been years since the first time you heard this. This time I promise it's real. Like a dog that keeps whining, but you love how it sounds, so you let it go hungry to hear it. Your shirts are all stained with the blood dripping out, and the problem gets harder to hide. Did we only let go to know we'd have something to find?
Well, there's a song on this record, The Mechanic, that reminds me of sort of everyone who has that unshakable savior syndrome, or like, you know, the idea that I'm going to find this person, I'm going to fix them, even if they don't need me to fix them. I think there's a selfishness, you know, sometimes in the savior complex, because you feel like if I heal this wounded person, that makes me a better person.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You have the need, this like, you know, this very selfish need to like, oh, you're the hurt one, not me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm okay. That makes me the savior. You know?
That's one of the examples of the songs that I started realizing had, to some degree, a counterpart. A lot of the songs on this record have counterparts. They weren't written that way on purpose. It was very accidental. But when you look at The Mechanic and then you look at Stray Dog, in theory, it is essentially the viewpoint of the person being fixed in The Mechanic. Because in The Mechanic, you have somebody being like, don't worry, I got you. Like, I know you weren't broken, I just needed someone to fix, right? That's one side. Yeah. The other side in Stray Dog is, and while I watch you try to fix me, I let you, because I'm only trying to give you the purpose you need.
Yeah.
And it's just the counterpart of the other side of being like, You can pretend you're fixing me if you need that to be the case, but in all your judgment of me, I'm technically the person who's doing better, not economically, not socially, but, you know, emotionally. People that don't understand someone else's freedom of self tend to be the harshest judges of it. And that's where I wish I had that confidence when I was younger, of realizing it's like the bless your heart thing, you know? While they were all trying to set me on a better path and get me to have a real career and all that, I was having a really good time.
Darling, are we saying this is finally done? I used to be happy, and I used to be all I've become. We used to be happy, now used to be all we've become.
You describe being on the road for, what, close to 7-8 years without really getting much response besides, you know, a lot of negativity, heckling, a lot of people doubting sort of why you should be there, what exactly you were playing. You know, combining folk music and sort of the death metal aesthetic, I don't think people maybe were ready for it and didn't know what it was about. And I think now it makes total sense. And maybe it always made total sense in that you had a lot of those old folk singers, Carter Family songs. They're pretty dark, a lot of them. You know, it's like you grew up singing these almost as hymns as kids, you know. Yeah. And You Are My Sunshine, it's like we're singing that to the, these little kids at daycare. Is anyone listening to the words?
It's like, so brutal.
It's like suicidal, you know?
It's so brutal.
When I walked here, I was mistaken. Then I hung my head and cried.
As you build new memories, you start to forget old ones. And I always wonder why I kept doing it. Because I don't really have an answer. I don't really want to say that it's because I had a strong constitution and all that, but it's not what it is. There's a bit of stubbornness for sure, but I think at the end of the day, through all the heckling, through all the problems, through the amount of people that did take it as their own punchline, there were a handful that didn't.
Yeah,
there were
some people understood.
And there were the handful of people that understood it to a level that it felt so communal and it felt beautiful regardless of what was happening with the rest. It was those people that got me through it. It was because of them that I was able to kind of keep going, and I'm really grateful for them. It was a crazy thing to process, and a lot of those people still come around. They're good friends now, you know. I've built some really cool friendships based on the low points of my life.
I mean, in a way, you know, probably your most listened to song, Hell and You, from that Volume 1 record collection. It's like sort of taking us into those moments where you're like, you're at the bar, you're trying to like learn like who you are and if anyone's gonna like be there for it, you know? Smell the vinegar stains.
Uh-huh.
All those bars where we're like, wait, I'm barely getting paid. I drove 10 hours to be here, you know?
When to the bar to get a little closer to myself and learn things I never really wanted to know. The walk got a little far, so I got into a cab that smelled like vinegar, stains that showed what's in the girl before. But I want to be where old stupid things I say sound so romantic and true. 'Cause I'd rot in hell with you if you just asked me to. I love the shitty things we do together. Live with me in this sin forever. Hell and you, I know you wanted to. I say take the shot, see this chance, feel the fire, and let me have this dance with you.
Every band or artist, I think, should go through some of those years, like in your 20s, you know, like I'm thankful that, you know, my group Dust Bowl Revival, we did those things where we slept on the floor for six years. And you didn't know any different. You know, it was like we were just like thrilled that someone would put us on the stage.
Yeah. You're walking away with $30 in your pocket and you're like, whatever. Like, who cares? And like, here's the funny thing, though. I talk about this with the band all the time, because a lot of the dudes in the band now, they came from, you know, either noise rock or metal or whatever it is. And I can't go back to those years. Like, if I had to start over, couldn't do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's too hard.
I sound bougie now, but it's not even that. It's just having a reference to how abnormal that really is and how exhausting it really is, and losing that muscle for tolerance.
Yeah.
I could never do that again.
It always makes me laugh when you go to like a nice venue. I remember we played this pretty like well-known theater in Denver. And the night before in Fort Collins was like this beautiful kind of like performing arts center place, which you expect those places to be cushy. Mostly old people are buying the subscription tickets. All right, we're playing the more rockin' night. Place was, you know, full of people having a great time. And they basically had no backstage. And they're like, oh, do you guys need some water? Or are you guys good? It was like, no. Wait.
We just store pouches in ourselves and we're camels. Like we don't hydrate. We don't need
it. Also, it's like we're you know, it's at altitude, right? We're like hyperventilating as, you know, LA, you know, sea level people. We're like, so you didn't think that maybe like just some water would be a good idea to have backstage? Like, why do people like venues sometimes they act so like mean-spirited towards the artists that actually provide them the reason for being? I just don't get it.
I don't understand anybody in the live music industry being I understand people being jaded. I get that, but
yeah,
I feel like jaded doesn't mean you have to be mean.
Yeah.
And you're right, there are so many bitter people, which same rate, there's also so many kind people, so many loving people. Like, there's so many. I'm sure you have your favorite venues that you just can't wait to see the crew there. You know, there's a lot of venues that we walk into and I'm like, I get to see X, Y, and Z, and
right,
grateful to see them again. But then, God, it's just, it's usually those old guys. Old guys are just so hateful.
Well, because they felt like they should have been somewhere else. Like, everyone's trying to go to somewhere else that they haven't quite gotten there. And here they are with you in this space, you know. Is there a gig in those tough years where you, A, either felt like you might die? Like, it was like, this is an absolutely scary, crazy situation?
Yeah. A lot. Quite a few of them, actually.
When you have an audience that shows up to sing these songs with you, because you have a very vocal and, you know, at times rowdy crowd.
Yeah.
I've seen you in action a few times here and there. And when you have a crowd shouting at the top of their lungs the words to "I hope your husband dies," do you feel like you are helping them through some sort of personal catharsis? Like, or is it like, wait, should we have the riot gear ready? And maybe that fine line is what makes it so exciting. Like, we don't know if this is going to go off the rails.
For the most part, I think it's just people realizing that, you know, we're not alone in these sentiments, and then just becoming this big old ball of singular energy that gets to be bigger than ourselves.
Right.
And that goes both ways. You know, for me, that is a very special feeling because it's surreal. And it's a funny phrase to yell within the context of the song. I wouldn't yell it at like Kmart, but
yeah.
'Cause I hope your husband dies. I hope your husband dies.
I would never say that out loud normally, right? Like, we all have that person in our lives where we're like, man, they just rub me the wrong way. Everything they do drives me insane. Okay, yeah. I'm going to think it, but I'm not going to say it. Maybe I'll say it at this show, though.
Yeah, I think it's that concept of, you know, we all know what it means to us. And I'm sure somebody means it with their chest. But for the most part, I would like to think that it's just a level of understanding that everybody in that room knows, okay, this is a thing we wouldn't mention to people in the real world, but here we understand what it is. We understand what it means. We understand the subcontext of it, it feels like we're actually listening to each other as opposed to us playing at them. And that connection is what I live for. I love that. I love that more than playing shows. I just love looking out and realizing we're on the same page here. That we got this. We're good.
So trust me, I'm not jealous. I'm just hoping that he really fucks things up. I'm not so much ashamed of being alone, just kind of feel I've had enough. But time and time again, time reminds me you'll never be my own.
There he goes. Big thanks to Danny Quirinos, a.k.a. Amigo the Devil, for opening his heart and mind with me. If you want to hear the entire uncut talk, please check out our YouTube page, The Show on the Road Podcast. We talked for close to 2 hours, so there's many, many more things to hear, including about his crazy collection of serial killer memorabilia. Check out his new record, Yours Until the War Is Over, on Liar Club Records. As always, The Show on the Road is written, produced, and edited by yours truly, Z Lupitin, and we are part of the mighty Osiris Podcast Network. Stay safe, stay creative, and we'll see you on the trail.
I hope your husband dies.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget, and we decide if they brought the one-hit thunder or were nothing more than a one-hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week. So pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.